thatgreatbusinessshow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to That Great Business Show, episode 51, to broadcast on Friday, the 10th of September, 2021. Now, you know that we like to mix it up on TGBS to make sure you're never bored and always learn something new for your business. To that end, on this week's show, we have a true one-off businesswoman, often referred to by her own friends as a maverick, and a most entertaining one at that. To date, we've brought you big interviews with Smurfit Kappa boss Tony Smurfit. On episode 14, he explained how you build a team even when your company employs 46,000 people. On episode 15, Irish banker Conor McEnroy told us about the many, many opportunities in Paraguay for young Irish people. Like Ireland in the 70s, is what he said. On episode 28, Dr. John Teeling's interview had everything you need to know if you want to get into whiskey, gold, diamonds, and even women's tights. And we had a truly massive and global response to the Queen of Primark, Breege O'Donoghue, who gave us an hour-long retailing masterclass on episode 46, a must-listen-to episode. So, no pressure then on this week's guest, Fidelma McGurk, founder of Westport-based global payroll tech company Payslip. Her company has already raised north of 12 million euro in funding. So I want to know how she got big backers to help her start to grow a world business from rural Ireland. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Fidelma McGurk.
Well, Conal, great to be here. A big intro there, so I hope I fulfilled that.
That was a big intro by a lot of other people as well.
Yes. We'll try and follow suit.
A maverick.
Yes, that's the first time I've heard that word in the same sentence as me, so I must check out your sources.
Well, I can tell you that as I would, I did check out with a number of people who know you, and that word actually popped up a few times, or variations on it. What makes you a maverick?
I don't know from their perspective, but I suppose there aren't very many female tech entrepreneurs who found their own companies. And then when you find it to be based in the west of Ireland, it adds a few extra layers of dimension. So probably a few of those pieces put together led to people thinking that I wasn't really following the most normal path.
Well, let us discuss your business, Payslip. What exactly is it? It's not, because you don't want to hear from anybody who wants their payroll done. It ain't a payroll company.
No, it's not a payroll company, but we do work in the payroll industry. So our customers are multinational companies who have payroll services companies already set up in many countries. And we're the technology company that they come to in order to automate and harmonize their global payroll operations. So what that really means is we are a global payroll control platform. Our customers with our platform can standardize how they manage their payroll across lots of countries. They can standardize the data. And by so doing, they can be really efficient in how they grow into new countries.
How did you think this one up?
Probably from like a series of sufferance and pain, I suppose. You know, like in a previous life, I was involved in different international businesses, including the tax back business. And I set up operations across 21 countries. And when you have that many set up, it's really important to be able to look across your cost base and look across what's happening and be able to see in some codified way what's going on. And really, we never could. Like, we found really good companies in each country, and then they all are telling us the rules in those countries, and they're so different. So when I moved to Westport in 2015, I looked around, and like, Westport's a great town, really good businesses. AbbVie is there, Port West, Carrigdon, the hotels are great, but I really just wasn't going to be any use to any of them. Like, what was I going to do there? My patients probably wouldn't meet what would be needed for great customer service in the hotels. So really, I sat down and thought about all of the different kind of business pain points I saw over the years in my international business operations management. And one of them that kept coming back was about this global payroll. So that's how I thought about it. And then I started the process of research.
Now, when you say you sat down.
Yeah.
I mean, people sit down and say, I wonder what's on telly tonight.
Yeah.
Or they sit down and say, I wonder what school the kids will go to.
Yes.
They don't say, I wonder what pain points businesses have.
No, but they do sit down and go, what am I going to do it myself? You know, so like when you're right, like when we moved first to Westport, I wasn't working. I had brought my three sons in tow. My great husband was continuing to work for the technology company he works for in Dublin. So the first few months weren't about sitting down deciding about pain points. You're absolutely right. But gradually, once they were settled into the schools and the community of Westport, I did have to work out what I was going to do with myself. And that was where I had to sit down and work out what could I do that would be useful in the market.
And Hubby is working for a Dublin-based company. Why Westport for you?
Yeah, we had been travelling there a lot over years. Pre-kids, I suppose, probably like a lot of people, we had a lot of active trips to surfing and hiking in the west of Ireland. And we went to different parts at different times of the year. Achill was always the destination at Halloween. So when my first son came along in July of 2008, I said, we just can't go to Achill when he's 3 months. I can do three things in Achill. I can surf, I can drink, and I can hike. None of really are very good with a three-year-old and a three-month-old in tow. So we went to Westport on that trip, and then we kept going back. And so gradually, we just thought it was a great location and a base for the family. And around 2014, 15, we were tired of commuting, and we had bought the house in 2013, but we increasingly kept spending weekends there when we really didn't need to. And then we decided to move.
We encourage businesses on That Great Business Show, and we also encourage businesses to locate outside the capital city.
Yeah.
Tell me some of the great things about Westport. Not that it's a beautiful city or it's a town and that it wins all the awards and all, but there are challenges. There must be challenges on your businesses servicing worldwide.
Yeah.
And I am not familiar with the international airport close to Westport.
Knock. Knock is fantastic.
Not the one that's heading, not for heading west, heading into the States.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Knock doesn't have an international runway to the States yet. So I think we need to think about that. So first of all, you're right about Westport. It is all the great things you mentioned in terms of great spot to live, wins all the awards. Firstly, I suppose the main point is our customers are multinational by definition. And when we're selling to them to solve a global problem, their teams that are making the decisions and will be the users are not in one place. They're geo-distributed. They may be a US company, but they have teams in Europe and lots of places. So first of all, when you're selling to them, none of them are in one place. So they don't really care what one place you're in. And really, the solution that you have with the technology meets the needs is the most important point. It's the first most important point. There's more after that that we might come into later. So being in Westport for our customer base is not a problem. Firstly, we can sell, most of the sales cycle can happen remotely even before COVID, and then we can meet them wherever they are. And the second thing, in terms of purely a location for setting up business, Westport does have excellent broadband, which is obviously the key thing. And then what are the other crunch points you're going to have is really location and office, and then labour and staffing. So we have good office space up to now. Now we need to find a different one because obviously we're growing much bigger. So we're looking at a few options that are in Westport. And there are a few, but there's no more than a few. So that's going to be an issue. There isn't a big office block built like in, you know, Silicon Docks in Westport or in Dublin waiting for a big tech company to come in or grow into. So we're working with local landlords on that. And secondly, in terms of staffing, we're open to where the jobs are, but we have a really strong bias to try and have as many jobs as possible based in Westport. And we are attracting people from who are from Westport and want to relocate back. We've had people from London, from the East Coast of Ireland, from different places. And we're also attracting people who have decided now post-COVID that they don't necessarily want to live wherever it is that they're living. And they're happy to try living in the West. So that's good. But the local available immediate market of labour is naturally smaller than if you were in big urban places.
And you say that you're looking for premises to grow into.
Yeah.
To grow into, to what size is the medium-term ambition?
Yeah, so we announced when we raised the funding and announced it in May 2021, we announced that we're creating 150 jobs. So that's correct. And we've already filled about 30 of those, some of which are in Westport. So really as many as we can. The current office space that we're looking at can house up to 80 people. And that includes additional office space so that people based in other countries, whether it's California, the UK, Spain or Bulgaria, where we have people, they can also come in every month or every 2 months so that we have it as a hub for all like the teams to meet together.
30 out of 150, that's, may I say it, slow progress?
In 2 months, we've hired 30 people. I don't think that's too slow, is it?
I knew.
I get you looking at a few CVs. You can have me out. Good. Yeah, we'll keep going. We'll keep going. So we've had some great appointments. We've had some great engineers and software developers, but we still have a lot of opportunity for software engineers. So I'm happy to call out today if there's any software developers out there or the mammies of Ireland who want your software developer sons or daughters abroad to come back. Please let them know that we're actively recruiting there. But we've also made some key appointments. Our CFO joined last month. He's based actually in Kinsale. And then we have a new VP of sales who started last week, Mark Simons. He's great. He came out of Workday. So we've already made some significant... He's based in Dublin.
I love this.
Yeah.
Westport, Kinsale, Dublin, Bulgaria.
It needs a sea. It needs to be beside the sea, seems to be the trend. You know, we also have Santander in Spain, actually.
I was talking to a guy, and I won't name him, but he set up a company. He's Irish and he's based in Dublin. And he set up a company in South Africa during COVID. Yeah. He's never been to South Africa.
Yeah.
It is over, isn't it? This thing about borders and difficulties like that, it's all yesterday.
Yeah, only to a degree, actually, I think. I do think people need to meet people that they work with. You know, like it's very isolating to never meet the people that you work with. And it suits some people, but most people like to have some social interaction.
You're talking to one of them here.
Yeah.
I'm very happy on my own.
You're happy.
One other thing that I saw during the week, and you mentioned internet in Westport being good. I didn't know, but Elon Musk's Starlink is available in Cork. I've had a call. Brian O'Flanagan was on to me on Twitter.
Yeah.
And they've just a new base just announced for Isle of Man. Very soon, that whole internet thing will just be again yesterday because Elon Musk and his likes are going to come out of the stars at you, yeah. You know, satellites. So yeah. It'll all be again yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a meteor shower tonight, so it could be tonight. Apparently, it's all night. I heard this morning on the radio. Yeah, I mean, we're good at the moment. We've Saro and Air, so we're pretty good. We'll keep an eye on any other developments. And if there's more, that's great.
Now, you've raised, as I mentioned, north of 12 million, 12.2, yeah. I think, or something like that, is it?
Yeah, 12.3, yeah.
12.3. Is that enough to go by, to go on with?
Yeah, it's plenty.
Until
it's
when?
Absolutely plenty.
Always another time.
At least two years. So we normally target mid-market companies. So our standard multinational customer would have about 4,000 or 5,000 employees themselves, but about 1,000 at least of those are outside of their own HQ. It could be a US tech company, but they have 1,000 in 7, 9, 15 countries. And we're doing well signing those up, but we're also signing up some very large enterprise companies. One has 44,000 people in 34 countries. One has over 100,000 people. So in terms of what runway you get from your investment, it depends on where you're going to prioritize the investment. If we're fast tracking our enterprise modules, which we are doing, then we have 2 years. If we decided then we weren't going to invest in those additional software features, etc., then it could last us longer. But we are prioritizing it. So we're not only building out new modules for our mid-market platform, but we're also building out our enterprise modules.
I'm going to come back to you in a second about the 12 million and about raising that. But first of all, I have to take a brief break here because I have to tell the world that these great business stories are made possible only through the support of DeFacto Shaving Oil, makers of the world's best shaving oil. Switch from unhealthy shaving foams to all natural shaving oil and you'll save your skin, your pocket and your planet. Check out DeFactoShave.com.
ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME, join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie. Great women-led businesses on every show. That Great Business Show.
Now I'm with Fidelma McGurk, who is founder of Payslip, a not payroll company, a payroll tech company, who has raised €12.3 million. Fidelma, in raising that cash, was that easy?
No, fundraising is never an easy process.
How long did it take?
From start to finish, from the start to the agreement was actually about 7 weeks, and then the legal takes about 4.
And before that,
yeah.
In getting to that point,
yeah.
How long does that take?
How do you mean in terms of talking to the right companies?
Finding the VCs and knocking on doors.
Okay. You know, that includes that process, yeah.
And finding the right investors.
Yeah, so this isn't our first rodeo, I suppose, in terms of fundraising in Payslip. And while we've raised north, as you said, of 12.3 million, 8.3 of it was this year. So in our previous raises, our lead investor was Frontline Ventures, who are VC based here in Dublin and also in London. And then we also had EI, Tribal and HBAN. So they were supportive in the fundraise this year. And Frontline have a very strong team, one of whom, Finn, provide a lot of support to me in choosing who the target list of VCs were that we started with.
Because that is important. And there's no point just knocking on every VC's doors because they do have their specific areas of expertise and interest.
Yeah, and you'll just waste your time if you're not very targeted. So, and you also don't want to make sure that the VC that you partner with or take money in becomes a partner, that you can work with them. So we were looking for international VCs that had a specific interest in fintech, because that's where we sit. Understand B2B enterprise software growth paths. So you're right, other VCs focus on consumer tech or maybe SMB sectors or even like some other deep tech or other kinds of engineering. So we made a starting list of those and we wanted an international dimension. So we had strong Irish VC, as I mentioned. So we were interested in VCs who are based in other countries and whose portfolio, their own portfolio, had a mix across different countries and had proven investees or software companies that had grown to different stages and had different stages of exits. Because that way you know that there's a lot of ways in which you can tap in for learning.
I have looked, and I'm sure you have looked, in fact, I'm sure you have looked at hundreds of VCs' websites.
Yeah.
And they are all full of motherhood and apple pie. They are all going to love you.
Yes.
And they want to put their arms around you and they say, we're not really just investors. We're going on the journey with you.
Yeah. I'm not very huggy though, so that's okay.
But is that true? Do they actually provide that service?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, there's different ways of looking at it. Some people would say it's all good till it's going wrong, you know. So I suppose what you're trying to do is make sure that whatever you're selling as the opportunity for investment is actually what you can deliver. And then when you agree what you're doing, that you have kind of structured and clear communication to make sure that they know what's really happening in the market. So nothing should ever be a surprise.
Now, how often would you be in contact with them? Hardly daily. Weekly updates, would you?
No.
Monthly?
The VC is not supposed to run your business. It's your business. And you have to run the business. They're not investing in your business to take over your business.
When it comes to private equity.
Yeah, but this isn't, I'm not a private equity space at all yet. Yeah. We're still at like Series A. So you have VCs that invest in like seed, Series A, Series B, C, and then you have the private equity guys. The private equity guys are absolutely taking over your business and merging it with other ones and packaging it up. I don't know what they do, but they put a big ribbon on it and I'm not in that space. So that's okay.
Yet.
We'll see what happens. But for the VCs, we have our leads this time were Muro Capital, who are the venture arm of Santander Bank, and then also Middlegame VC, who specifically only invest in fintech companies. So to answer your question, we have our quarterly board meetings, and we usually have a big kind of strategy session once a year. And then I'll normally organise that I or somebody else, the CFO, will give some sort of a kind of a monthly update. It's probably in more detail than they want, but I figure if they're informed, then at least they know it.
And if you are at those either monthly or quarterly or annual meetings, do you have to spin them a big, fancy future? It's all going to be so rosy, it's unbelievable.
Well, no, you'll be setting yourself up for a mess if you do that. You know, like you need to tell them what you're going to do. Like in the end, it's your business. You want to grow the business. So you're not going to, there's no point in wasting time building some mirage of some type of a business you're going to build that is not your intention anyway, you know? So, no, I'm a pretty straight talker. So I kind of pretty straight, I hope. And I would tell them where we are, what's happening in the market and what we need to do next. So yes, there is a focus on the meetings that they want to know where's the future and where's the growth path. They don't want to spend loads of time dissecting last month's, like you're not going for a borrowing loan, you're going for like a future growth piece. So no, I think it's better to be pretty straight.
And what were or are the bumps that you have met? What are the issues that you just either found uncomfortable or that you weren't expecting during those funding rounds? It couldn't have all been plain sailing.
Well, no, it isn't supposed to be. So the funny bit with the funding round is that you set yourself up for a lot of rejection deliberately, right? So you have to decide at the start.
But each rejection is a rejection. And how do you take those? Yeah, how do you personally take those?
Yeah, you have to decide how to take them, you know, and ask why it was rejecting. So if you start with 25 VCs and you want to end up with 2 or 4 term sheets, whatever you want to end up with, it means, like, without any imagination and being a big Einstein, you're going to get 21 rejections, unless you're going to get a term sheet from them all, which nobody ever gets, right? So when you're getting the best model for a fundraise is to try and get as many no's at the first stage, after the pitch. Because if you don't get loads of no's after the pitch, the very first one, then loads of them come into the middle part of the process. And that's the time-heavy part of the process, because you're giving them demos, you're explaining your customers to them, you're going through loads of details, lots of documents. You don't want that.
For those who have not gone through this process, will you talk me through from day one through till...
Yeah, so a normal fundraise is you have to own it. That's to make sure you stay owning it. You decide which VCs you want, how much money you want, for how much, all that. You decide all that yourself. You have your business plan done. So before you ever go near anybody, you have your whole business plan, your financial model, you've all that done.
Whose decision is that? I mean, everybody wants to own 100% and have zillions of pounds given to them. So who is the deciding? Who do you go to or ask for? What should I be looking for? What am I worth?
Regardless of what percentage of the business you own, you're owning the proposal that you're going for more funding. So you're owning the plan for what your future should be. And if you have already got investors, then they should know about this because you're having your meetings. So you can't go for funding without talking to your current investors to say, right, here's the plan, folks. We have 9 months left of runway or whatever. And that will do if we follow plan A. If we want to be far more hyper-aggressive and we want plan B, then we need all this extra chunk of cash and this is what we're going to need. And I've made a whole scenario and here's the business plan. So you've done that. So you own all of that, like proposing, and then you discuss it with your current investors and you make a decision to go for fundraise, how much you want and where you want to go. On the valuation, you do a few things. You benchmark it. You look at what's been happening in the market in your own industry. If there's a comparable business, there's no comparable business in our industry. You look what's happening for similar type businesses in other industries. And then you also take a sentiment of the market about how much in demand you are. Who are your customers and why are you getting them that nobody else is getting them? And for some of your customers, like some of our customers, they've been looking for a solution for 6 years. They thought about building something. They thought about buying it. They thought about using system integrators. They didn't find one. And now they're coming and then they're massive. So you know that actually you're on this like pinnacle of solving something that nobody solved before. That brings up the value.
I'd say it does. Very nicely.
Yeah. So you do. You should decide yourself what you think the valuation should be. You can also hire a corporate finance specialist to run valuation and prepare a lot of that. Like I did that. To be independent of our investors, independent of me, independent of anybody that was involved in the business.
And in terms of the your own personal wishes, does somebody come along and just get a big hammer and say, stop that, Fidelma, don't be going there in terms of valuation? Like somebody has to sometimes maybe not be with you, but with others, just try to talk to them down off the ceiling in terms of expected valuation. I know you said that you're going to benchmark, etc.
Who's going to do that, Conal?
Well, somebody who loves you, I presume.
Why?
Because they don't want you to be hurt. How will you be hurt?
You'll only be hurt if it's rejected.
Oh, well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Okay. But before you get to the rejection, you have to decide you're going for investment and you have to run it by your current investors and you're going to say the valuation should be X. Now, the current investors want the valuation to be high because it validates their investment and it's a higher return. You want a higher valuation because it reduces your dilution. Okay? So the only person who should be saying it's not worth that is the person who's going to give you the books, right? And if you've only one person who's going to give you the books, well, then you're going to be in trouble. If you've multiple, then you're fairly okay.
And if it's a one-on-one, what is that conversation like when you're dealing with Fidelma McGurk?
Between me and whom, sorry?
Somebody who's going to give you money. Or possibly, if you're down to the last person to give you money, how do you handle that?
But that's stressful. You know, that's, now we weren't in that situation, but That would be stressful, very stressful, because you know you need. It depends as well how much runway you have, because in the end you've actually invested so much in building the future vision that even if the previous vision without the money would work fine, you don't want it anymore. You know, and you feel like you're going to let down the whole company and the current investors if you're not going to do it. So that's where things get a little bit tricky. You either have to try and explain more and prove more the value that you're talking about, or you're going to have to take a higher dilution.
Let us take a change of tack for a few seconds about others, because I know that you are very kind and that you do mentor others in business. What do you say to people, particularly women in business starting off in the tech area?
Yeah.
Do you say, don't do it?
No, or I don't. It's great. Having a great time, Conal.
It is tough. You've got to admit it's tough. It's not easy.
Yeah, it's tough for anybody to set up a tech business. Is it tougher for women, is your question? Is that
No, it's a general question.
Yeah, a general question. I think that, I don't know if this is, like, to me this is very common sense, but one of the points about setting up a company is that by the time you're setting up a company, like you asked me at the start, how did you get this idea? And it was born out of like 20 years of experience. So I'm not 18 with no debts, right? I have kids, I have a family, we have a standard of living. They need to be educated. They need music lessons, whatever it is, right? I have a husband, he's working, which is good. But like there's a context there in which the entrepreneur, the founder is actually living. So if you're actually going to go and found a business from nothing, not only are you taking the plunge into like something unknown, you're also accepting that you're going to earn absolutely nothing for at least 2 or 3 years. So it's not just that money's not coming in. You're also probably putting in money and there's money going out for no immediate return at any, like for a good while. So that's the context that actually is probably difficult for other people to understand about the stress. Like that's actually the stress, because you're kind of putting a burden on your family to say, whatever good salary I had before that is gone and we're going to take this risk. And I don't really know when I'll be here or I won't be here. And I definitely won't have 9 to 5 hours. So that's the context for any person who's founding a business. So, and that's part of the risk of it. So you need really good support and they need to all buy into it.
And that is why so many people don't really understand how pressurized it is to be an entrepreneur. Whether you're running the corner store or some mega company, there are no set rules, sure they're not.
No, there aren't. And you don't stop thinking about it when it's tea time. You know, like you're talking about it at any time of the day, or your kids will ask you. Like my kids rang me before this and said, what are you doing in Dublin? How did it go? How are the candidates? Was there anybody any good? It's not that I'm reporting to them, but they keep asking the questions because they know I'm not at home.
How are the candidates? Something. Are you interviewing me for something?
No. We're hiring a chief technology officer at the moment. So we were doing the final interviews this morning and it was really nice to meet the people. I have to say, for like after a year and a half of very few face-to-face meetings, we met them within obviously all the social distancing rules, but it was great to meet them in a room.
I do ask people in business this, particularly when you've had a couple of years under your belt, when you are traveling around and you have already solved a problem with your technology, are there other opportunities that you see and you say, God, if only I had time and money and an extra pair of hands, I could be doing that. Anything that you look at, what I'm looking for in particular is, for our listeners, any suggestions as to what they should be looking at for business ideas?
Oh, I've loads. Yeah, loads. I wouldn't give them away though, Con. I mean, like you'd have to buy them off me. I have one specific one that I think would be really interesting to do because I can't understand why nobody's done that before. But outside of that, what I see...
Hang on. Are you not going to tell me?
No, of course not. No.
How much would that cost me in a few years?
I don't have to think about that one. That's a good question. But what I do see is when you're setting up, like this is probably obvious at this point as well, but I went out to set up a platform for multinationals to run global payroll. Like it's probably the most awkward specific segment in the market to go for first because they're big multinationals, so they have big procurement processes. They have InfoSec requirements. They expect a big delivery company. They have all these extra needs that they have to have. And it's not because the top guy wants it. It's just because that somebody has the job to make sure that the box is ticked and robustly. So we have customers like Forest who are leading in hair salon.
That's P-H-O-R.
P-H-O-R, Forest, yeah, Rona Purcell's company. And they are the leader in the world, in Ireland, the UK, the US, other countries, Australia, in software in their specific sector, which is the SMB kind of hair salons, 2 to 3 salons each. We have AMCS Group, who are down in Limerick, and they are the leader in the world for bin company technology. And I've looked at other companies, and I do think that if you're starting from scratch, like from absolutely nothing, it may be a little bit easier. I'm not saying massively easier, but maybe a little bit easier to find more SMB companies in your own market to sell to first before you start going to the big multinational companies. So in that space, I do look at different verticals all the time and go, what's happening over there? What's happening over there? Is there anybody sorting out that? Like Glowfox did a great job for the fitness business.
We've had
them
on the podcast.
Yeah. Connor and the guys. Yeah. They're also in the frontline portfolio. So I do think the vertical specific businesses is a smarter way to be able to get up and running probably a bit faster, you know, or solving a very specific need rather than needing a huge amount of integrations.
Will you hold that thought, please, because we have to take a quick break. And I have to tell you that DeFacto backs your businesses. So please back them by buying the world's best shaving oil, DeFactoShave.com. And as creator Tom Murphy keeps reminding people, it's a shaving oil, not a beard oil. So it's for everyone that shaves. That's why he says it's the best anyone can get.
You're listening to That Great Business Show. ThatGreatBusinessShow.com. ISME is the independent SME association, looking after the interests of all types of businesses across Ireland. ISME membership includes invaluable HR and general advice, training, promotional tools, members' discounts, events, and networking with fellow SMEs. ISME membership starts from €195 with easy pay options. ISME, join today at isme.ie or email membership@isme.ie.
With me at the moment on That Great Business Show is founder of Payslip, Fidelma McGurk. Fidelma, if you were starting today, you're successful now, would you start today?
Would I do it all over again?
Type of thing.
I would. Yeah, I'd do it. Yeah, I'd do probably some things differently, but I would do it again. Yeah.
Is earning an easy living in a multinational not easier?
Yeah, probably in lots of ways, yes. Yeah, you're sure that it's going to happen.
Yeah. When you are lying in your yabba just before the lights go out and you close your eyes, what's the big dream?
It's not really necessarily about work when I'm going to bed, I have to say. Is that the thought? Honestly, I really want to build Payslip to be known and accepted as being the front runner and leader in global payroll operations technology, which it is. Like we see with the multinationals that we sell into, they have already automated key operational functions such as finance. They might have SAP in place, HR, they have Workday in place, marketing, it's Marketo, sales, it's Salesforce. And really, we're just the next piece, which is global payroll operations. And there has never been a technology to automate and harmonize, global payroll operations before. And we are it.
And when you started, did you know that there weren't any others?
I did. I knew there was nothing else because I went looking for it.
Yeah.
And the only thing I could find was this legacy services model. Like there's loads of companies, good companies providing services aggregators like ADP, iPay. But in the essence, it doesn't actually automate the process internally and externally for a multinational company. So they never have the full control of their global payroll operations the way we would have with our platform.
We are very keen on gender balance on That Great Business Show. So we are very keen to promote women in business. Let me hear some thoughts that you have about how much better, how much more, how greater women in businesses could be in Ireland. For example, we're big, big pals with Paula Fitzsimons and Going for Growth.
Yeah.
And she does incredible work with incredible women. Yeah. Is there anything else that you'd like to see?
It's a good question. So I know Paula well. I'm involved in Going for Growth and I've been a lead in that since 2014. I can see every year the positive impact it has on the businesses around the table and their non-competing businesses. So the peer-based system helps very well and they all grow phenomenally. Like the businesses I had this year, they across them all, they had hired people and they had about an extra 30 people working for them after 6 months than at the start, despite COVID, right? I think that there has been a big push across the country to try and help women in business in lots of ways. So there are different programs. I obviously like the peer-based one, which is why I'm involved with the Going for Growth one. They usually say it comes back for women to role models. And I think it's very difficult. There's a few things. Like we can see that there are a lot more women in the multinational companies at more senior levels and in tech-related roles, right? But there are barriers to them leaving those roles. And those barriers are the things I mentioned, that they will have no earnings the week after, you know, that they will still need to pay for childcare to be able to go to work, whatever all those different things are. So this isn't anything any one policy I think would probably help in company in the country. But if more of those women are to come out to set up businesses, then they will have to face that. But for more women to keep going into technology, I think the role models in the school and the universities are still really important. And honestly, it goes way back right to primary school. I might sound daft, but like, I have three sons, I have no daughters. My sons were Lego obsessive. They're now Minecraft obsessive. But when they were Lego obsessive, they went to Lego summer camps and things like this. There weren't any girls at them.
That's very interesting.
If you go to buy Lego, right, for girls, it is pink and green. And it is girls in the beauty salon. If you go to buy Lego, generally for anyone, the boys' ones have all the dinosaurs and the robot. They're designed to be more for boys. You can't buy a pink dinosaur. Like, the way that the Lego is designed, it's like, here's the boys' one and here's the girls' one. I have two nieces. I went out of my way to buy Lego that had the mechanics in it. I was buying them trucks and I was buying these things and I could see them looking, it's a truck. I was like, I can't find anything else, but I know you're going to like all the little bits in it. But I do think that from way back when, I think if the, the online groups that my sons play on in Minecraft, it's nearly all boys. And then there's a sister of one of the boys on it. And she's equally good. She's brilliant at it. And they all learn from each other and they're improving all the time and they're learning basic programming skills. All of those kind of games that they play, both online and offline at the junior level, can feed into the STEM programs later on. And I think that we could think a little bit more about it at primary level.
Did you spend your days in university playing computer games?
No, I don't play computer games.
I'm glad you said that, because I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, you know what, you don't have to play these games to be either a tech superstar, a tech hero, whatever.
Right.
Because I'll tell you why I know that. Not that I can do anything tech, but my mammy always said I was going to become a failure because I never would play with Meccano, which is the predecessor of Lego.
That's what I remember, Meccano, yeah. So it's a good point. I probably crossed over from women in business to women in technology. So that's a fair point. In the women in technology and the STEM programs, I do think the points I made were probably valid. For women in business, no, I think just thinking big and outward.
And how do you learn that? Who's going to, I'm just always interested in who will kick you into that. With boys, a fella kicking a ball believes he's going to be the next superstar playing for Villarreal or whoever, Messi, exactly. And I'm just wondering, when it comes to business, are there those people? We don't have a lot of international business superstars here, do we? You know, people would say the Collisons, but nobody knows the Collisons.
In the States, probably not, but here we do.
No, we know of them.
Yeah.
No, but nobody knows. I wouldn't be able to tell you whether, you know, they support Munster Rugby or whatever.
No, I think they're trying to rebuild back their connections here, all right. Yeah. I don't know. I think, there's probably opportunity for some of the international leaders to be more known. Like the Intercom guys did a great job as well, or the Teamwork guys. On the women's side of things, you do have good businesses like Altify. Anya Den set up Altify. It became very successful. Then she sold it. She has Susan Spence and Sofco. But
Susan has been on with us, and Susan will be on with us again very soon.
Yeah. So, and Leonora is probably on from Pharmapod as well. So yeah, maybe we just need to tell their stories more.
And that's what we are here for.
Yes. So it's up to you, Colonel. Thank you very much for making it all happen.
No, I just want to make it happen because I'm just like you. I'm a parent and I want to make sure that there's equal opportunity right across. And it's also better for the community and for the society here. going back to community, society and politics, and I'm not going to ask you about politics really, but are there things that you would like the government, the those in charge of running us to do, particularly on the taxation side and or just on the whole business area, trying to promote business?
Yeah. Every founder wants them to change and improve the beneficial tax for founders. There's the current.
Talk me through what's there at the moment. You're led a million quid, is it? Or
There's an entrepreneurial tax relief, I think.
Which is not anywhere as good as the UK. I think the UK is 10 times better.
Yeah.
And everybody has been knocking on the door saying, please. And there's another element to it where if you're given a shareholding, I think that you have to pay your taxes immediately, even though it's not valued. It's a mess. So I presume.
It's complicated, and tax is always complicated. But definitely as a founder, like there's the current one, if we sold massively tomorrow and I had 20 million and I have to pay half it in tax, like that doesn't recognise the fact of all the stuff I gave up over the years or the risk. And it doesn't encourage me to take a risk the day after, you know. So obviously you try and see what you can do to tax plan, but there aren't really many options in Ireland. So that's definitely one, and every founder in the entire country will agree to that. Yeah. Yeah, that's the main one, really.
Back to the future. Get that? Back to the future? It's a
yes.
movie. Okay.
Yes.
What's going to happen next?
We'll keep growing, and we're going to implement some of our great new clients this year and next year. And now that we already have our new VP of sales, I mentioned, and we've increased the size of our marketing team as well, we will get far more aggressive on the market to tell the story bigger.
And when you go knocking on the door...
Yeah.
Do they care that you're Westport, or do they even ask, or do they know that you're from Westport?
No, they might ask. If you say Westport, they might ask which Westport. Was it Connecticut? Whether it's, you know, New Zealand. But they don't really mind which Westport it is, not at all. It's just whether they have the growth. If they're growing in the way our other customers are growing, we know that they're going to meet the growth inefficiencies that we solve. So as long as your platform... can solve the global payroll control issues that they have, then they'll license it.
And you are comparing yourself with some of the vast companies like SAP and Salesforce.
Yeah.
You mentioned those two.
I wouldn't compare myself to SAP now, actually.
Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon.
They have more to do in the market. They bought SuccessFactors and it's doing well, but their old systems are still very legacy. Workday would be the cloud-based leader in the HCM space, yeah. Yeah, all of those, Salesforce on the sales side, they all change the markets fundamentally for those pieces. Like if you think back 20 years, did every company that you had on your call at the time, whatever program you had then, Conal, did they all automatically have a HR system?
I don't know.
No, they didn't, is the answer. Absolutely not. Not at all.
Okay, yeah.
I was in Aircom 25 years ago and we were introducing SAP, and it was the first time Aircom had a big HR system. But SMBs and smaller businesses wouldn't have had a HR system. Now it's a given. It's a given that, oh my God, you have 50 people. Where's your HR system? How am I supposed to book my holidays? Everybody expects, because we're all digitized, that you log onto an app to book your holidays. Nobody's going to email their line manager or ring them or fill out a spreadsheet somewhere. That's not going to happen. Like, you don't want death by spreadsheets. And it's the same in payroll. Like, payroll is like the forgotten cousin that doesn't get invited to the wedding.
So tell me, what does it do? I should have asked
our
you
platform.
This. I should have asked you this about 40 minutes ago.
It's fine. So what happens on our platform is this. So we have three portals. We have the core employer portal. And in that, the process, and I know process isn't the most exciting word, but the process for managing your payroll is standardized. So what does that mean? They have one way of running the payroll, regardless of the countries, on the system. And it's digitized and it's all automated. And that feeds in and out to all the people. So whether you have HR people or finance people or line managers who have to tell you, Conal, how many joiners they had this month in their team, how many people left, who got a bonus, who got a commission, who's getting stock. Normally, before they use our system, they're sending you emails, they're giving you a spreadsheet, they're filling something out. They didn't do it. You're chasing them. Some poor sod is chasing them around the house. All of that is gone. So all the manual orchestration that people take as a given with spreadsheets that you think is gone, it's not gone in payroll. It's still there, but not when payslip is implemented. When payslip is implemented, all of the manual exchange of data, organizing of workflows, communication with people, that's all automated onto our core platform. And then all of the data for payroll is exchanged and managed in our platform. So it's the same data set. And then the employees get their payslips on the employee self-service portal. So that's the same all around the world. So when you have your international enterprise, Conal, in like 17 countries, all of your different people will get their payslip in the same way on our platform.
We'll give you a big fat zero.
We'll give you a special rate. And then the payroll providers have the portal through which they exchange the data as
and
well.
What size companies is your minimum target? As in, what size must they be?
Oh, the minimum companies are about 250 people.
Okay, that's doable, isn't it?
Three or four countries. Yeah, they're quite small, but they grow really fast. All of our customers are high growth.
Deliberately?
Or that's is it just... That's who we target, but also it's who comes in, because it's the high growth company that think digital first and they're looking for smart systems to automate what they do. So they know that global payroll operations has to be an enabler of growth. And if they don't sort it out, it will be a choke point for their growth efficiency.
And what do you use to target these companies? Have you got a little, do you remember the old fashioned telephone directory? Do you go through
the old yellow pages?
The yellow pages.
It doesn't work anymore. Honestly, I'd love if it did. It'd be much easier to just pick it up and ring them all. Everybody beginning with B today. No, not anymore. We did like the old trade shows. Now, I love a good trade show because everybody in the industry is there and it's all sorts of shenanigans going on. But the trade shows obviously have been put on hold because of COVID. And
the virtual
ones just aren't the same. So we do attend some of those normally. In the meantime...
But when you are sitting at a desk, I don't mean you for Demma McGurk, but your sales team, how are they finding... So I'm asking this on behalf of our listeners to say, look, the best thing that I've found to do is...
Make a target list of the type of companies that you want and reach out to the relevant personas in those companies.
But using LinkedIn or using...
Yeah, LinkedIn. And we're in global payroll associations. So we're very involved in different webinars there as well. So they attend them and then they reach out to you as well.
So it's a combination
of interactions.
Yeah. Reverse engineer. Go to the event and then find out who is there.
Yeah, well, we know who's in the membership.
Of course you do.
Yeah.
You probably have sponsored and bought the attendance list.
Well, no, we'd never buy a list. That's totally illegal, Conal. You can't buy lists died to the GDPR. We weren't even buying it before that. No, you can't buy lists, sorry. Or telephone directories. Should that be illegal these days too?
Actually, would be, wouldn't it?
They would, yeah.
And when you think of it, I could work out backwards where you lived, what your number was, et cetera. Mind you, you can still kind of do it with Google Maps and stuff.
Well, now that COVID came in, your phone number's in every notebook in the whole country. Anywhere that you walked in the door, you need to put your phone number in. But that'll all come to right again afterwards. So honestly, it's pretty straightforward. Our technology is different to what's out there. And we know the keywords that our customers would use to search for that type of technology. So we do traditional advertising online and we also participate in association events. We organize events and we invite people to join them. And we're very active on LinkedIn as well. It's a great tool.
Further questions. One is normally my last question, but I'm going to ask that first.
Oh, yeah.
Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
If you'd asked me a few weeks ago, I would have said Mark Simons in Workday, because that's who I was really interested in having to lead our sales and alliances function. So I'm delighted to say Mark joined last week. So that box is well ticked. There's a few other really good salespeople I've met around the house. I don't really know if I should say their names.
Probably
on
not,
air.
Because if you're going to chase them, somebody else might go after them first.
Yeah, I think that
any
might
big
might
name.
Be
a lot
good.
Of people seem to like, I don't know, Richard Branson.
Yeah.
One person said Mother Teresa.
Well, I don't think like either of them could fit in the room with me, to be honest. I think I'm sure Richard needs far more ego. I'm not big into egos. I don't think Mother Teresa has an ego, but. I like people. We like people in Payslip who don't have egos. There's never a space in the room for them. So we like people who bring core skills and like to get things done and are very good straight talking people. So I'm not really coming up trumps to the
I had Breach O'Donoghue on from Primark and she refused to give me a name until I beat it out of her almost.
Yeah.
And she said Bono.
Bono.
Bono. Any good?
Bono. Bono might need a bit of supporting too. Like, I think he's well looked after. If I was going to think of somebody...
Find me a woman.
I met a great lady as well a few years back. I forget her surname off the top of her head. Her name is Lexi. She was the COO of Gusto. Gusto is an HR SMB, an HR solution in the US market, especially for SMBs. And I liked what she was doing with growing Gusto because she really knew what Gusto was for. Like, she was only building it and selling it for what it was supposed to be. And that's a really tricky thing to do. When you go and build technology, you can get seduced by other market segments and opportunities, and then you lose track of who you are yourself. You actually have to stay laser focused on things. So I quite like that.
Alexi is her first name or second name? Do you remember?
Lexi is her first name. Yeah. Lexhi. And there's also a group of guys that spun off from Workday to set up a VC called Base 10 in San Francisco. And they're very interesting. They had led companies that Workday had bought, and then they spun off to set up a different kind of VC. And what they're doing is very interesting. So if I had future VCs in mind, I'd probably be a little bit honored, which is probably the way of doing it. But I like what they're doing, and they're really, because they're founder investors, they also have a different perspective on it, which I like.
They are two great ideas because, first of all, you've explained about Lexi and about being laser focused, and secondly, the way that a VC can look at the world differently as well.
Yeah, so we didn't talk about that in the VCs. In the VCs, you have career investors, and then you also have like founder operator investors. So on our board in Payslip, we have David Clark, who founded Cape Clear, which was also bought by Workday. And so David's great because he's a technologist. He founded it with Henri O'Toole, then went on to find Utmost. And it just brings an additional perspective separate from the career ventures. So having that mix is good as well in your investors.
You see, when I pressed you, you were able to come up with them.
Yeah, it's slow on the thought. Yeah, I need to come up with somebody that's European-based as well. Is
no,
really the issue.
No, that's
yeah.
good. No, because we're global now. Yeah. Final question is, we are Team GBS, That Great Business Show. Yeah. What could Team GBS do for Payslip?
I think That Good Business Show is really, what you're doing now is good in having a range of different kinds of leaders of different sizes of business. I think that's very good. And even from the introduction, you could see whether it's from Smurfit Kappa or Breege, you have people from all different sectors and different sizes of companies. In essence, when you're building a business, for me as an audience to your show, you learn from somebody regardless what their business is and the vertical. The best nuggets can come from outside of your own sector. So I think that's very good. So to continue to have that cognitive diversity and that diversity of business on the show is very good.
Cognitive diversity. Yeah, very posh.
I'm big into cognitive diversity.
Very good. Listen, we better finish it there. Fidelma McGurk of Payslip, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show, because that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 51. As always, my thanks to the team here at the Dublin Podcast Studio, home of Ireland's best podcast sound engineers, including today's sound man, Rob Curry, helping make us the best sounding podcast in the world. Station manager Peter Rice is actively looking for other podcast makers to use these beautifully upgraded studios in Dundrum, Dublin 14. You will not find a more enthusiastic team in the whole world of podcastdom. Lots of businesses are starting their own podcasts, and that's our business. So if you would like us to produce podcasts for you, get on to producer of thatgreatbusinessshow.com right away. We also want your ads if you want to talk to Ireland's SME community. That Great Business Show is the way to do it. Email, as I said, producer at thatgreatbusinessshow.com, where you can find out all about our advertising packages. And if you know of a great business that should be featured on Ireland's best business podcast, please do not hesitate. Tell us all about it on our website or via our LinkedIn page, where we have great conversations with past, present and future guests. Finally, my thanks to our sponsor, DeFactoShave.com, the world's best shaving oil. Try it for just a week, and like me, you will be a forever convert. So from me, Conall O'Moran, until next week, Slán tamall.